Welcome back to the FKT podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Today, I'm joined by Georgia Porter, who's at the female-supported Arizona Trail FKT. We chat about their experiences with sleep deprivation, fueling, and the emotional aspects of this iconic long-distance FKT route. So, Georgia, thank you very much for coming on the show to talk about your Arizona Trail FKT today. I'm really excited to chat with you about this trail that I love.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You recently set the supported Arizona Trail record, and that is your first FKT on the site, so maybe your first FKT overall. And I'm kind of curious if you could talk a little bit about your journey, because it looked like when I was reading more about you, you started out as a road runner, transitioned to trails, and then ultras, and now an FKT, and not just any FKT, any 100-mile long FKT. That just seems like such a journey, and I would just love if you could talk a little bit about what that has been like and what prompted you to choose the Arizona Trail.
So I didn't start running until I was about 25, and at the time I was working as a paramedic, and I just felt like I needed to get in shape. So I come from a family of runners, and I just felt like it was everybody else's thing. I was a bit of the black sheep, not doing the whole running thing. But I found my way into it finally. And I did the college thing first for a little bit. I went to Western State Colorado University when I was 27, did the track thing. And then I decided I wanted to do the roads out of that, or after that. That's kind of the next progression. So both my sisters and I, we all moved to Flagstaff, Arizona together to train for the trials. And yeah, just did the road half marathon, full marathon scene probably for 5 or 6 years. And there were some parts of that that were really fun, but I got really, really burnt out doing that. Mm. It felt like I was just chasing times and continually losing my joy and my enjoyment in the sport. And so that really came to a head, I think, at the end of 2022. My last marathon was the Chicago Marathon, and I was insanely overtrained for it. I had a really miserable experience. And while I was out running it, I knew it was my last road marathon. And I actually thought I might just quit running in general. So I took a couple weeks off, and I went on a trail run after that. And I just tried to get back to the very basics of, like, what do I enjoy? Do I actually enjoy running? And I realized, yeah, I love running on the trails, which I did throughout my training just because I enjoyed it. I don't enjoy a lot of pavement. But I think I had this idea in my head that, you know, maybe I could go to the trails once I was in my 40s and retired and slowing down. And I don't know where that idea came from, but I realized I could trail run whenever I wanted to. So yeah, I haven't really touched much pavement since. And what's really beautiful about the trail scene is there are so many distances. There are so many different terrains. You can explore so much with it. So for me, I just started exploring longer and longer distances. And the longer the race got, the more I enjoyed it, the more it intrigued me. And so last year, I did my first couple 100-mile races, both of them in the mountains in Colorado. And I love that it's called the distance of truth. Just the resilience it takes, and how that kind of, once the distance gets longer, it really just strips you down. And something about that really intrigued me. So I did those, and yeah, it's like, okay, well, what's longer after that? I probably could have stair-stepped my way into this a little bit better. But the longer trail, something about the Arizona Trail just has always intrigued me. And I just started throwing the idea out to a couple people that ended up being in my crew, and everyone was so stoked on it. And I was getting so excited. I definitely think I didn't know what I was getting myself into, for sure, until I was in it. But I just had this idea grow and grow. And I had a lot of support, just with friends that came together to help me plan and organize and crew me. So it really felt like we built this little community. And I think that's kind of why I wanted to do it, was to create a community and have an experience that we could all share together.
I mean, I think that there is definitely some value, especially in really long FKTs of not really knowing what you're getting yourself into until you're out there.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, and I knew, I was like, this is going to be the hardest thing I've ever done. And it was so much harder than I thought it was going to be. But it was also so much more enjoyable than I thought it was going to be also.
That's good. That's a good mix.
Mm-hmm.
So during your, obviously you said you, I don't know if you currently live there, but you did live in Flagstaff. During your training and preparation for the Arizona Trail, did you see much of the trail outside of that immediate area? Like, had you ever been into like the Mazals or the Superstitions? Like, did you scope out the trail prior to your FKT?
I did. I did, obviously, the sections around Flagstaff. I've done the Grand Canyon several times. And then I did the Mazatols and a little bit in the Superstitions as well. And I did a section out of Pine. What was kind of funny is that a lot of the scouting I did during my training was in August and September. It was so hot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that was kind of interesting, an interesting choice. But I wanted to see some of the trail. So I probably saw maybe, like 150 miles worth, somewhere in there.
So aside from scoping out the trail, what was your training like for this? Because, you know, this is a, for those who don't know, the Arizona Trail is a really highly varied trail. I mean, you've got very flat, fast terrain. You've also got incredibly slow, rocky, technical terrain, and it's very well mixed. How did you approach preparing for that?
Well, one thing that's kind of funny is I've always been a very high mileage runner, especially when I trained for marathons. I would peak out at like 120 miles a week. I think this was the least amount of mileage I put in of any training season I've ever done. And part of that, I feel like I've just been doing a better job of listening to my body and realizing more is not always better. But the other part of it is I've just been moving so much slower. Not necessarily Arizona trail pace when I was training, but just putting in long zone one days and having it be okay. I actually didn't really track my mileage much. And then as far as terrain, I think naturally I just get a pretty big mix anyways, just because I have such easy access to all the trails near Flagstaff, to the Grand Canyon, to Sedona. So I just have access to a lot of variation. So that feels like something that's always been a part of my training and what I do. So I wouldn't say that I did anything specific with the terrain, but I definitely put in bigger days, bigger back-to-back days.
And so you mentioned when you were doing your scouting, the heat. And I know that this season on the Arizona Trail, like Arizona had a heat wave that went really far into the fall, triple digit temperatures well into October. So how was the weather for you during your FKT? Did you have to modify your start time because of that heat wave? Like, how did the weather impact you?
I feel like for the most part, we really lucked out with the weather window. I had to time my attempt with a program that I'm in. So there really wasn't much choice in my start date at all, but it just ended up working out really well. I was a little nervous during that heat wave. We were constantly checking the weather app, but fortunately it started to dip right at the start. And actually what we ran into a lot more was issues with cold.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of funny, but the first like four or five start like days and in the evenings, it was really cold. And so we kept saying, oh, when we get down south, it's going to get so much warmer. And it just never warmed up at night or in the morning. So we like joked about that all the way to Mexico.
Right. I mean, it's not the Arizona Trail if you don't both experience freezing weather and like potential borderline heat stress.
Oh, yeah. But there was the highs and lows on this trail in every sense of that. Definitely happened. But yeah, there was, snow all the way up day two in the Grand Canyon, as well as the final day on Miller Peak. There was probably the most snow there.
Oh, wow.
And then, plenty of times in the desert, it got pretty warm still.
Yeah. I'd like to talk a little bit, like another part of training, not necessarily the physical training, but the preparation for doing this. It seems like you had a fairly large crew. So I'd like to know a little bit more about your crew, your pacers, how you handled those logistics. What sort of planning went into putting this into play?
So much planning, as I'm sure you are well aware of. So I was coached by String Bean for this, who, well, he doesn't anymore, but he did have the men's Arizona Trail Record. So he was a really incredible resource to meet with, not just for the actual training, but we talked so much logistics. And what I feel like was most helpful, I sat down with him and his partner, and we went through so many of their crew stops and crew access points, because that can be really, I think that's one of the most challenging things with the Arizona Trail. So much of it is so remote that getting crew access was one of the biggest hurdles we had. So I mapped out, I had like a 60-page document of all the different crew stops, maps, GPS coordinates, how to get there, so that they had an overall plan. That was probably the most planning we did. I scouted some spots as well, just to know, but there's only so many spots you can scout. And then I started building my crew. So initially I was going to make this attempt with someone else named Meredith, who was going to join me, and we were going to make the attempt together. She had some health issues come up, so she wasn't able to do the full trail, but she was there helping. My partner, Sean, was there helping. One of my really good friends, Will, who's crewed me in my hundreds, came on board to help. And then another good friend, Matt, was there. So I had the four of them, and we did all that planning, talking about crew stops, talking about how the flow of each day should work, talking about how my vest would need to be packed and what kind of nutrition I would need. And then we got out there and had to figure it all out again, because stuff just is like constantly changing. And what's really great, and I should mention too, another couple friends that came out, my friend Cam and my friend Sarah, they weren't there the full time, but they were definitely a huge part. And that whole crew was so good at problem solving everything, whether it was getting a vehicle into a certain spot. Sometimes there was spots that wouldn't work and they had to, on the fly, figure it out and find a new location. There were plenty of spots that they had to hike into me. They would, you know, start a little campfire, set up a sleeping bag, so when I rolled in, I could stay warm and they could set me up to go again. But we were figuring it out on the fly for sure many times. And it got funnier and funnier the longer the trail went on and the more sleep deprived everybody got. We're just getting real goofy out there.
Yeah, I mean, people frequently ask me, you know, just general advice for the through hikes or for FKTs. And I was like, you know, make a really good plan and then be prepared for it to go completely out the window. It's nice to have that illusion of control before you get on the trail, but just know that that's not going to hold.
Oh, yeah, pretty much none of it held. Like how I, it's so funny because I feel like I had so many expectations of how it should look, how it should feel, how it should go. And I just had to let go of those one by one. And sometimes that process was more painful than others, but it was a huge letting go of what something like this is or should look like.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. FKTs in general, especially really long ones, are very good avenues for growth.
Oh, yes. I feel like I went through like the death rebirth process out there many, many times.
You mentioned sleep deprivation and having a sleeping bag waiting for you. What was your sleep strategy? Maybe how did you envision the sleeping, and how did the sleeping actually happen?
Oh my God. This was hands down for me the hardest part, because what I envisioned, I was like, oh, I'm going to move 14 to 16 hours a day and then I'll come into camp and I'll, you know, be so happy and I'll lay down for like 7-ish hours and sleep for 7 hours. It'll be amazing. What actually happened is it was harder to control moving for 14 to 16 hours just with certain crew access points. So some days it'd be moving for 14 hours and some days it would be moving for 21 to 22 hours because I had to get to the next crew stop. And then when I would lay down, this is what I didn't expect. I was in excruciating pain, just nerve pain. And so most nights I couldn't sleep very well. And so even when I could lay down for a decent amount of time, I would be shocked if I averaged more than 4 hours a night. Plus, including the last two nights, there were three other nights where we had to have me moving for 21 plus hours. And so to do that full day, because, you know, including waking up and then going to bed, that was almost a 24-hour day, five different times this happened. And that so the sleep deprivation was insane. I did not know it was possible to be that tired. I started hallucinating, I think around day 8, and that just kept going the whole time. I was falling asleep on the trail. My pacers were falling asleep with me. And then, of course, when you're in that state, the emotions that come up, and everything. Just, yeah, I was shocked by that level of fatigue. And two things that were really interesting for me was that, one, I envisioned myself out there just being an animal the whole time, just like, yeah. And half the time it was me bawling my eyes out at 2 a.m, you know? So it didn't feel as badass as I imagined it would, or I should say being badass didn't feel as I imagined it would. But the other thing is, and this especially was true for the last few days, I thought I had given everything I could give. And so to still have to push from that place. In our last 2 days, we did a 21-hour push, then I slept for 90 minutes, and then we did a 22-hour push. And I felt like I was accessing deeper wells that I had no clue were there because I've never been pushed to that extreme.
It's funny you talked about like crying because of sleep deprivation. And I feel like during FKTs, I'm like crying all the time. Like I'm hiking, nothing is wrong. I'm just bawling. And I'm sure people see me, they're just like, she's just having a mental breakdown. And I'm like, no, I'm just regulating my hormones. Okay. Like I'm just really sleep deprived right now. And I'll just feel way better after I cry. And it's like very difficult to explain that to somebody who has never like had to push themselves into that, you know, terrain before. So it's reassuring to hear you speak of a similar experience.
It's very reassuring to hear that from you also, because I think sometimes when it's portrayed in media, we don't see that part. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to know that I'm not the only one out there crying for half of the FKT.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I remember writing about how much I cried one time and then people were like, well, it doesn't sound like you had any fun. And I got like heavily criticized for it. I'm like, no, it was a lot of fun, but there was still a lot of crying. Crying doesn't mean it's not fun. It just means it's a different experience.
Yeah. And I think there's still value in experiences that have a level of discomfort to them, you know?
Yeah. Like you mentioned, there's a lot of growth and death and rebirth that's happening. You know, I feel like anytime you're pushing your limits, there's this, you know, there's going to be discomfort, but that's how you grow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned that you had hallucinations. Like what level of hallucinations were these? Were these like you see a stump and you think it's a bear, or are these just full on like you're imagining, you know, unicorns like following you along the trail? Like what scale of hallucination?
During the day, to me, it felt like kind of like a very psychedelic fractally type of hallucination. Just nature looked really incredible and fractally. Mm-hmm. That was really enjoyable, actually. And then in the evenings, it was, yeah, like stumps or rocks or shadows. They were all animals or toasters or baseballs or what. They were just not what they were. So it got so frequent, though, that I was like, maybe it was an animal and I'm just like assuming it's a hallucination. So, but yeah, things like that, nothing too crazy.
Yeah, that when I attempted the John Muir Trail FKT years ago, I was hallucinating so badly. Going up one of the passes that I was certain I was hallucinating a bear until I walked right up to it and basically realized it was actually a bear.
Oh like, my gosh.
And then I was like, now I am like within petting distance of a bear and had to get out of there. The bear was not happy. I mean, it left me alone. Eventually I backed up, but I just was convinced I was hallucinating it because I had been hallucinating so wildly. Like I didn't know what was real and what wasn't. The bear was real.
How many days in was that?
Oh, gosh. I think I was on my third day, but I hadn't slept at all. Like, it was like, you know, day three of no sleep. It was pretty wild. And then, you know, had me questioning my life choices for sure.
Were you with anyone or were you by yourself?
No, I was by myself. So the way I actually knew it was a bear was that there were other people on the pass. And I was only like a couple switchbacks below the top of the pass. And I heard a woman at the top of the pass yell, bear, like really loudly. And that's how I knew that there was actually a bear, because I figured I wouldn't be hallucinating somebody also announcing the bear.
Do you think if she hadn't done that, you would have pet the bear?
I think I would have realized it right before, because I feel like I was sort of realizing it right when she yelled that. And that was sort of the confirmation that I needed that like this bear was far too realistic to actually be a hallucination.
Wow.
Yeah, definitely. Like hallucinations are pretty wild. And it's very interesting to see where your brain goes when you've been sleep deprived for a long period of time.
Yeah, I was joking with whoever my pacer was at the time. I was like, this is the most expensive hallucinogenic out there.
Right. But, you know, it's the most all natural, do it yourself. You know, all you have to do is keep yourself awake for a long time. You know,
so easy.
So easy. Speaking of pacers again, like, I actually wanted to ask you a question about, it looked like you had some people pacing you on bicycles. Did you have that often, or was that just like one picture, or am I hallucinating that you were paced by some man on a bicycle?
Or maybe I was. No, I had a couple times people pace me on bike. And it's funny because the way I had things set up before, I thought, oh, I'll have a couple pacers each day for a couple sections and I'll run by myself. But from the start, day one, my crew is like, if you don't want to do any of this alone, we are going to be with you every step of the way. So I actually didn't do a single section alone.
Oh, wow.
So I had a couple people on bikes for a couple sections, but that was definitely not the norm. And yep, some people in my crew, they were putting in 150, 200 miles for the whole trip. I mean, big numbers for them as well.
Yeah, no wonder they were also tired and hallucinating.
Oh my gosh. It was really funny because about around picket post, which I think is 500 in, we had a couple people come in that hadn't been around our crew. So a couple new pacers come in and it was very clear that they were like, you all are on a different dimension right now. Cause we were just being so goofy and silly. And actually after that, we decided not to bring anybody else in. Cause we're like, we have a flow going. This makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Pacers know exactly what I need. And at that point too, the last 300 miles, I definitely needed a lot more assistance and help out there.
Right. Yeah. Did you have any issues with injuries? I mean, I know you said that you were in a lot of pain at night. Was that just general like aches and soreness, or did you actually have any injuries when you were out there?
The pain at night was just general achiness in my legs, in my joints, in my back. And my body actually held up really well. I was really happy with that. I had a little things pop up that were very manageable, just achiness in the knees from a lot of the descending. And I think, let's see, coming down Mount Lemmon, which is like probably 4 days from the end. So what would that be? Day 12? Yeah, day 12. I started feeling some stuff in my left Achilles. The next day was Micah. Going up Micah, my Achilles was so angry. I was crying. It hurt so bad. And, you know, I'm just like, how am I going to have to crawl for 150 miles? So that Achilles was a real issue. And it's super funny because two of my crew members are doctors. One's a PT. So they were checking it out. And they were telling me, your body's resilient. You're going to be okay. And then after I would go to bed, they're like, oh my gosh, there's like this huge lump in there, what is going on? So they did not inform me. But what ended up having to happen, this started happening 3 days from the end, but the last 2 days I couldn't run anymore on it.
And
so I just had the hike. And it was funny because I wasn't upset about it, but I was kind of disappointed. I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to slow me down. And then Meredith was just like, oh, your running pace is not any faster than your walking pace right now.
Yeah. Like when you're really late in an ultra or something and you're making the running motions, but yeah, your pacer is walking next to you and you're just like, oh, right. My brain says I'm running, but I'm really not.
Absolutely. That was what was happening.
So did you see any snakes or wildlife that weren't hallucinations? Anything interesting or problematic or exciting?
Yes, that was one of the funner parts. I think the coolest thing I got to see out there was a Gila monster.
Yay, I saw my AZT this year too, and it was so exciting. I was like, oh my God, this was worth everything.
Yeah, I saw one on Nick's video too.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I've never even heard of them. So I definitely thought it was a hallucination. It was, my brain was having a hard time figuring out what was going on, but it was really beautiful. And then I was kind of looking at it. And then afterwards, one of my friends paced me and we listened to a Tooth and Claw episode about how dangerous Gila monsters are, like how their bites are like the most painful bite ever and they're poisonous. So, but yeah, I got to see actually one of my, I think it's maybe not my first, but I haven't seen a rattlesnake in quite some time. So stumbled across one of those, lots of elk, had a couple golden eagles fly right over my head, which was really
sweet. Oh, wow.
Yeah, a flock of wild turkeys, lots of cows.
Right, of course. Did you have any scary issues with the cows. I feel like the cows were scarier to me than anything else I ran into out there.
For sure. There was a couple that looked like maybe they were going to get interested. But the only issue with the cows, this happened a couple times, is they'd be running along on the trail. So we're like trying to get around them and they
right.
keep going forward on the trail. So that was like the only issue. But I didn't feel like ever anything was dangerous with the cows for us.
Could you talk a little bit about your fueling, like what you ate and drank? Like how did you, like maybe what you planned, how that ended up? Like did you make any big changes when you were out there?
Yeah, I've historically had an iron stomach and never had any issues, even up to the 100-mile distance. So I just assumed it was going to be smooth sailing. But I've also, even up to the 100-mile distance, I've typically done liquid nutrition. So I was really nauseous in the mornings and evenings, really nauseous. It was super challenging to try and get food down. Mornings, we ended up, we did breakfast burritos for a while. I think we switched to pancakes eventually. And I kind of went through these swings where sometimes I could only get down some liquid nutrition. I just couldn't fathom whole food. And then sometimes where I couldn't do that at all and I only could do whole food. So it was a constant. Basically, we would take a lot of options out each day. My pacers would be carrying stuff. I'd be carrying stuff. So if I did want whole food or if I could only do a gel, whatever it was, we had options available. But I don't know exactly what it was, if it was like the cold or something, but that's when I would really start to struggle. And my pacers got very good at, because I was getting a little resistant to it. My pacers did a really good job of saying, okay, do you want this or that? Instead of saying, do you want to eat?
Right. Yeah.
I think I had planned to try and get down. I definitely planned to get down at least 5,000 plus calories a day between 5 and 8. And that did not happen. I feel pretty fortunate. I feel like my body's really good at fat burning. So, you know, if I was more in the carb burning arena, I think this would have been a lot more of a problem. But yeah, we're just trying to get down anything that would work.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like when you're doing something that taxes you at this level, I mean, it's not surprising that your stomach is going to revolt to some extent. I would love to hear your highest high and your lowest low.
Man, the highs were so great out there. I think one of my highest highs was rolling into mile 600 at the end of whatever day that was. I was feeling amazing. I was running most that day. I just had this feeling of just knowing exactly who I was, that I was meant to be doing this, that I was in the exact place I wanted to be in, having so much fun with my crew. We had burgers that night and fries and we're just like laughing. And I remember being like, it's smooth sailing from here on out. I feel so good 600 miles in. And some of the other highs too. I just really enjoyed in the mornings running through sunrise. That was typically when I felt the best. And then I think my lowest low came after Mount Lemmon. Those last 3 days just, I mean, challenged me on every level. But after Lemmon and heading into that third to last day, I was feeling so low. I was like, it took me a while to figure out what was going on. And I realized with my friend Will, when he was pacing me, I was like, I'm depressed. Like I'm experiencing depression right now. And it was so sad. I had no idea that that was going to be part of the experience. And so he just let me cry it out. And I was able to name it and feel it and let it move through me. And then it did start shifting after that. But it was pretty wild. I've dealt with other stuff like anxiety and things like that. I typically don't experience depression. So that was, that was a surprise to get hit with that so far.
Yeah, I mean, I think that like the emotional roller coaster of something big like this is massive. Like you feel everything, every gamut of emotion happens out there, basically.
I think a lot of like the lows and the suffering that occurred were mainly because I had an expectation of how things should go and it wasn't being met. So for example, you know, being a few days out from the finish or 150 miles to go, I assumed that would be amazing. Like I'm so close. I've come so far. But in my mind, I was like, I'm in so much pain. I am so sleep deprived. I'm slowing down because of my Achilles. And I just want it to be done. It wasn't this like how I had envisioned in my mind being a, this more, I don't even know. Like I envisioned, I didn't envision that at least. So having it get that low without realizing it was going to get that low is really what caused a lot of the suffering. And I think, I imagine that if I did something like this again, being more open to that full spectrum would hopefully alleviate some of that suffering.
I call that the almost end, because like when you compare it to like what you've done so much and there's so little left, but you're not close enough to the end where you're like, it's almost over. It feels like I can't possibly do this anymore. And it has happened to me on every FKT I've ever done. There is a point where everybody's like, you're almost there. And I'm like, I'm going to quit. I can't do this anymore. You know, because you're just at this, you already feel like you have reached and given everything and you still have, you know, you know, 100 miles to go or whatever, something that seems like you have nothing left for that.
Yeah. It feels like, it felt like one of those dreams where you're trying to get somewhere and you're going so slower and slower and that thing is getting further and further away. And I was like, I will never make it. I will never.
Right.
The end will never come.
It's a very strange feeling. So yeah, you feel like you're never going to get there. And it doesn't matter how fast you're moving or, you know, how many miles you do each day. It's just like, I'm never going to get there. It's just, this has gone on. And I don't know why, like, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, it happened like 150, 200 miles from the end of the AT, which is, you know, 2,200 miles long. And it happened south of Flagstaff on the Arizona Trail when I had like 100 miles. It's like, seems like it's always when you have like about 100 to 150 miles left. I don't know why.
Well, I feel in good company. So,
yeah. How has your recovery been?
Pretty good. It was interesting the first week. I feel like my body has recovered pretty well. I don't feel too banged up. Even my Achilles feels fine. I went on a little jog yesterday and it felt really good. That was my first run back. I was beyond exhausted for almost an entire week afterwards.
Yeah.
I would sleep and then all night I would just dream that I was moving on the trail the entire time. It's like it was so weird to just end this thing that I've been doing and being so immersed in. I cannot imagine the AT or the PCT. I cannot imagine what that's like to try to come back from something like that. So that adjustment coming back was hard mentally. The exhaustion kind of let up after the first week of catching up on sleep. The only thing physically that's lasted is I definitely have nerve damage in my feet. So I got a pedicure today and could really feel the guy touching my feet. He was like,
oh, wow.
What did you do to your feet? I typically wear more minimal shoes that I run into the ground. So I just had like 10 pairs of crappy shoes that had not much to them. And so I think it was just such intense pounding on my feet with very little protection. Mm. So I'm sure that'll go away eventually, but they're still numb.
Right. I mean, the feet definitely are the MVPs.
Yes.
They have to put up with everything. No matter how much the rest of the body complains, it's the feet. It comes down to the feet.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, that was... Other than the Achilles stuff, that was the most intense pain that I dealt with when I was out there. And it was really interesting because I think 4 or 5 days in, I was like running through the night and I was just, my feet were excruciating. Every step hurt. I was crying. And I feel like in the 100 milers, I was capable of kind of dissociating or distracting or crying about it or just trying to get to the end and make it get over with. But I was like, I'm 5 days in. I have up to 2 weeks left. I can't run away from this pain anymore. So what I ended up doing is just really trying to feel the pain and just like experience every sensation of it. And it completely shifted my relationship with pain after that. Mm. I had that pain the rest of the trip, but it got to be a little bit more in the background. And I don't know if you've gone through this or if it happens all the time, but it was a really cool part of the experience.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely had to learn to acknowledge the pain. And I think that it's just like a lot of times pain is just our body trying to get our attention. And kind of similar to what you're saying, like, you know, early on in like my FKTs, I was just like, all right, well, I acknowledge that this hurts. I also understand that this is not going to kill me. and this is just going to be part of this. And, you know, it still hurt, but it definitely was taking up less brain space. You know, it wasn't, you know, this only thing I could think about, because once I had like focused on it and been like assessed it, it was like my body was like, well, it still hurts, but like we're not constantly demanding that you pay attention to us because now you've acknowledged there's a problem, even if you're not doing anything about it. It's kind of a weird like kind of conversation you have to have between your brain and your body. But there, I feel like there is something to that, like addressing it, even if you can't change it.
For sure. Yeah. And I think, you know, our culture now is so avoidant of discomfort and pain. But like you said, if you're doing that, then it's just going to keep being louder and taking up your mental resources because it wants to be seen. And so it is pretty incredible that we can enter into a different relationship with pain or relate to it in a different way. And that can change our experience with it.
And I think that the Arizona Trail is like kind of the perfect trail for that because it's so varied itself. Like the trail is very varied. And then like the ways that people come to that trail and experience that trail are highly varied. And I like that. I like that symmetry.
I really do too. I had a funny moment. I was being paced and ran past this woman who was just out there backpacking it. And we were chatting for a little bit and she mentioned, she was like, oh, your setup is so light. And she, you know, was fully self-sufficient. She had all her stuff on her back. And I was like, oh yeah, well, I mean, my crew carries everything for me and they change my shoes and they cook my clothes and they clean me. And I was like, I think that's the least badass I felt of the entire trip.
Yeah, just a very different experience and approach to the trail. Did you see Nick or any of the other people that were attempting FKTs while you were out there?
No, Nick started before me. Okay. Who else was doing it? Mike started before me also. And I think there was a woman who started something after me, and I'm not sure exactly where that's gone. Or I think there was two. Yeah. I know one dropped, and I'm not sure what happened with the other female out there.
Yeah, I was just curious because it was a very busy fall on the AZT. There were a lot of people.
Yeah, and so I felt almost a sense of camaraderie with these people that I wasn't actually physically interacting with, but just knowing we were all out on the trail doing something like this was really sweet.
I like the fact that, you know, the FKT community, like, because, you know, most of the time you're doing an FKT by yourself, but yet there's still like this sense of camaraderie because, like, you know, other people have done it. There may be other people attempting a similar thing or just doing something on the same trail. Like, there's still a sense of like camaraderie to it, even though it's not like lining up at a race, you know, with a bunch of other people at the same time.
Yeah. And I, many times out there too, because Tara Dower finished the AT not long before I started. So that was also right. A source of inspiration while I was out there.
Well, Tara inspires all of us.
Yes. Yeah. The yeah. Queen.
Yes. Well, awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate you chatting about the AZT with me.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again, Georgia, for coming on the show. You can read about their FKT on the website, fastestknowntime.com.